हिम्मत मदद दे खुदा, ये आपने सुना होगा वैसे, ये बहुत महामंत्र है दुनिया का। आप हिम्मत मत हारिए, तब वो मदद करेगा, तब वो बताएगा कि हाँ मैं हूँ, तब तक आप उससे दूर है। पर आपको लगा भाग भी बेकार है, भगवान तो होता ही नहीं है, ये सब नास्तिक बातें ये लोग करते हैं, क्योंकि हमारे प्रयासों में कमी है।
This was today's powerful message from the one who led the foundation of Amritam with his hard work and in-depth knowledge of Ayurveda, our very own Ashok uncle. And you know what? His presence on this season's very first episode makes this season even more special. Welcome to Season 2 of Rediscovering Self with Amritam. Amritam is an Ayurvedic lifestyle brand and wellness community growing globally, celebrating nature, beauty and mindful living. This is your host, Shweta Dalmia, and on this season, we together take the journey of building a healthier, happier and fuller life through the power of incredibly powerful Ayurveda. Yes, it's about our health, our happiness, and that too at our own place, our very own Amritam, your Amritam. Let's get started. Welcome, Sarah, on Rediscovering Self with Amritam. Today we are rediscovering why do some people fall sick too often? What can they do? Today is a day that lets through this conversation empower someone towards their goal, their dream, their vision towards a healthier, happier and fuller life. Today I am a voice to this question from many. But before, you know, Sarah, you answer this, I would like to actually wish all of our listeners good health. And yes, you came at the right place. Today you came at a place you can trust, listening to the right voice and our very own Sarah Kuchera on Rediscovering Self with Amritam.
Hi. So you ask a really challenging question. Well, I think there are so many different ways to answer this all-encompassing question of why do I get sick so often? I think the easiest way to look at it is really from the perspective of how our society is as a whole, which right now is so many of us are in disconnect from nature and our natural rhythms. That's one big thing. And that's often as a result of having so many demands that we either place on ourselves or we are feeling influence to do things better, bigger, harder, more, faster, all of those things. So in those different ways, all of us then experience our own consequence from that. But I think in the biggest ways, like if I had to answer with one thing, why are we getting sick? That's the biggest one.
It's all in the mind, you know, like I feel that we just have to break the boundaries that are in our mind. And, you know, like it's going to be tough. It's going to take courage, but we all can do this. And through this conversation today, I hope that we help people, you know, attain their vision of a healthier life. So Sarah, you know, before we actually go on that, why are people falling ill too often? I want to, you know, like ask from you this thing. So I have seen, like, you know, some very close by, near and dear ones do this. So, you know, like they fall sick too often sometimes, but for them, it has become like a new normal. You know, I'll tell them, okay, why don't you see a doctor? They're like, no, it's normal for me. Don't worry. It's okay. So why is it important at the first hand to first address this issue? It's important to address this, right?
Definitely. I know that in my practice, I see people that have a lot of different ailments that we look at as like the first sign of being a bigger illness, just a small imbalance, but they've become so normalized in our society as something that we all experience. So whether that's not getting a full night of sleep or dry skin or not having a bowel movement, just these things that our medical system has also made it easy for us to get an over-the-counter drug for, we often assume that it's just something that we all will experience at some point in our lives. It's kind of like someone who's getting older assuming that they feel this way because of their age. But what we fail to do is to realize that a lot of those things that we experience are not necessary, that we can live without those things. A big one that comes to mind in that regard is with women and their menstrual cycles, that we do not have to have painful periods. They can be asymptomatic and they should be asymptomatic. So, but yet again, it's something that's become very normalized, that that's just something that a woman would have to experience. And so because of that, I think that we not only don't stop to check in and to notice that these things aren't normal, but also the not stopping to check in is a big deal, that if all of our day is filled and we pack our time with different activities, we don't pause to just take a breath and to tune in and see how we feel. Like as I'm sitting here talking to you, I have my legs up on my chair and my feet crossed and my hands are down, you know, and so I'm like noticing, like, even as I'm talking to you, I have little check-ins with my body. I'm touching my legs, I have contact with my feet. And even that's not common because we wear shoes and, you know, so there's just so many things that we have lost connection with. And it's not being emphasized as being normal. So yeah, because most people won't go to their doctor if they have dry skin or, you know, something small like that. So we're missing a lot of those signs.
You know, like you touched a very important point. And also I'm just sitting the way you are sitting.
Yes, it's comfortable, right?
It is so much, like it just gets into the vibe, you know, like it helps to, for me, it helps me to connect with the person on a better note because I am myself very comfortable.
Yes, right. At the same time, and this position makes me feel very grounded. Like I am aware that I have contact. I don't have contact with the literal earth or even the symbolic earth because I am on a chair, but a good portion of the lower part of my body is connected to the chair. And that gives me more of an anchored feeling than only having my feet connected to the ground. So whether I was consciously aware of that at some point, maybe not, but now I am aware. And I prefer to be in that position because it's making me feel grounded, knowing that I want to be able to pay attention to our conversation, not to any kind of discomfort that I might be experiencing or to create a feeling of overstimulation just because of the way that I'm seated.
No, totally agree on that. Sara, like, how do you define sickness? What is Ayurveda's definition of sickness?
Well, the easiest way that one might define sickness that should definitely be expanded upon is the absence of an illness, but it's so much more than that, that health should be defined by the way we feel in our mind, that we should be happy, that we should have a well-functioning digestive system, that we should be, of course, free from illness, that we should sleep well, that all of our senses should be intact and healthy. But the biggest piece in that is really just is happiness. And I think even that, there's a lot of people that really, in fact, today when I was working earlier, someone had walked in for an appointment and I happened to be laughing with a coworker, and we were laughing kind of hard because we just like to have fun. And he walked in and said, "Do you laugh every day?" And I'm like, "Well, of course, you know, like, I mean, you know, I want there to be an effort to be laughing." Of course, if I didn't feel well, it would be harder to do. So there is sort of a cyclical, there's like a feedback loop involved. But I do think that just our mood, not only our mental state, because I could be an overall happy person and have a day where I don't feel well, either mentally or physically. But that is a big component that our lives, that we should find fulfillment in the work that we do, that we should have a community that we connect with and we feel we belong and that we should be supported, that we should have partnership with people, whether that's a friendship or an intimate relationship, that all of those things, there's so many more things than just an evaluation physically that really feed into the way that we feel.
You're totally right on that. And you know, like my next question to you here would be that, so why do people fall sick? You know, what are the, you know, things that lead them to, you know, falling sick too often?
Well, a lot of things lead back to what we're taking in, whether that's something physical or non-physical, or if you want to think of tangible or non-tangible, emotional, experiences, food, all of those things that we take in have to be processed in some way. And of course, some things have to be eliminated from our body in some way. So one of the biggest things I think that we could first look at in terms of why people are becoming sick, you know, I mentioned our connection with nature, but if we were to kind of whittle this down into something that felt like it was more, even more measurable, it really is how well we can process things and our discretion for what we're taking in as well. Even something as simple as if I'm eating my lunch, if I were eating at work, that's one thing. If I'm eating while I'm working, that's another thing. Or if I'm eating in a loud restaurant versus a quiet restaurant or in my home, that I'm not only taking in my food, I'm taking in everything else that's around me. So that inhibits my ability to digest, to get nutrients from my food, and to remove from my body what I don't need. So in addition to this disconnection from nature and even not taking time to pause and check in, or even to know what we're supposed to check in with, because that's maybe a part of the problem too, is that we weren't given an instruction manual. And because we are becoming more and more removed from nature and from, you know, our health systems are becoming much more industrialized, we just almost don't even know some of the simple things and the simple ways to care for ourselves. So not only are we disconnected and not really even inherently anymore knowing the things that we need to care for, we're not taking time to check in. We are taking things in and not processing them well. So many components to that.
And it, like, you know, since you also talked about food, you know, while having food. So I want to ask you here that what are, you know, some of the practices that we, like, what are some of the practices that Ayurveda tells us that we can do while eating foods that we can maximize the absorption, like the nutrient absorption from the food?
Well, I like to think of these as guidelines, because if we start to put too many rules or restrictions in place, that also can make us not feel well, which is important, because if we're, even if some foods technically aren't good for us, but we're eating it at a celebration where everyone is happy, that food has a different type of effect on our body, because the experience with which we're taking it in is also really important. So I mention this because I believe that a lot of the things, I don't want to say like rules were meant to be broken necessarily, but there are things that we should look at and also remember that there is an allowment for ease and for softening around these. So rather to think of them as just strict rules, that these are guidelines and things that can be helpful. So the first one that comes to mind is to really think about the timing of our meals and how many meals we have and which ones we choose to eat in the biggest manner. So by having more like 3 meals a day or 2 meals a day versus snacking and being able to space out our meals where we have about 4 to 6 hours between. So there's enough time for our body to get through enough of a digestive process before we add food to our system. That would really be helpful. Because if we take something in and then we have a snack, we might not only be mixing food that has differing digestibility, those variables are at play. But it's sort of like you're adding something to something else that's partially digested, and that creates too much room for error, that there's potentially like fermentation in your gut and things that can happen that could cause bloating or really upset your digestive system. So that timing, having 4 to 6 hours between meals is great. Making lunch your biggest meal is also great, because we know that our digestive system is its strongest between the hours of 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. So changing with the sun, which means that our later meal is going to be something that's a little bit smaller and more of like a supplemental meal for something that we maybe need energy to carry out the rest of our day. And then with the sun as well, that if the sun is down, then the closer it is to sundown, then the less food we should be having, but also we probably shouldn't be eating much when it's dark as well. So the timing of our food is really, really quite important. And with timing as well, that our meal, you know, the size of our meal we should never feel over full. We should never feel a big sense of relief after you know, I don't want to time my meal so that I'm starving by the time ravenous by the time I get to be able to eat. I should feel hungry, like have a healthy appetite, not feel like I don't need food or feel like I can't wait for food, but to have just a healthy appetite and to feel satisfied, not to feel over full, and not to feel like I need more food within an hour either. And so with that, there's also even this idea that maybe if we're eating our food, we shouldn't be spending more than 10 to 20 minutes. Like 20 minutes might be the maximum amount of time that it takes to actually consume. And if it's taking longer, we're either having too much food or we're doing too many other things along with eating as well. So just including that little add-on with timing as well. And then of course, if we need to stimulate our digestive process, if we need to stoke our digestive fire, there are also some practices that we could do as well. Something as simple as just drinking like hot water or warm water, sipping on warm water even just throughout the day is helpful. If you were to have a little bit of warm water also before your meal, that can stoke your digestive fire. Avoiding ice and cold drinks, especially around meal time, so that you're not putting out your fire before you put the food in. So quite literally like a fire, we don't want it to be out. We don't want it to be burning too brightly. We don't want to smother it. We want to stoke it and we want to feed it, but we don't want to swing too far in one direction. You could add different spices, like ginger, of course, is really great for stimulating our digestive system. Different teas like cumin, coriander, and fennel tea is a really great digestive tea as well. So those things that help to bring up our fire before we eat are also really quite important. Chewing our food, making sure that we're having... thinking of like a bite for each tooth that we have. So you're chewing your food enough times before you actually swallow it, which I think also, you know, if we eat too quickly or too slowly, there's again, that time factor comes into play. And again, that reminder that we keep these as guidelines. So I don't want people to be like timing themselves or, you know, you don't have to count every bite, but to have an idea of what that is like. So those are very basic ideas and things that I feel everyone could adopt. And then, you know, the rest of that would depend on an individual's digestion and what they're dealing with more specifically.
So, you know, like when we talk about that people falling sick too often, the first thing that comes to our mind is a weakened immune system, like the immune system is weak. Like what do you have to say about it? Like, is it one of the biggest reasons?
I think so. And I think that on a practical level, this really makes sense, right? That if our body needs specific nutrients for its defense system, that if we aren't able to absorb those and to take those into our body, then that to me is, it's like immunity 101, that if we can't feed our own defense system, then we just, it's not going to work. So if you're taking in really nutritious foods, it may not matter if your digestive system isn't working, which was, that was actually a big catalyst for me having written a book about like routines and things that we should be doing and kind of how we should be planning our day. Because in my own practice, I noticed people that were really health conscious in the context of what they ate. And you could look at like, if they created a list of foods, you would think like, gosh, this person is eating the most nutritious, like nutrient dense foods. But sometimes those nutrient dense foods are not able to be digested well. Yeah. And so if you can't absorb them and your digestive system isn't working, like you could be taking all of the foods and all of the supplements even that are said to be really great for your immunity, and it's not going to work because your body isn't getting a chance to utilize them.
So, you know, like what are some of like the other ways that Ayurveda suggests for people who are falling sick too often?
Well, with immunity, another word that comes to mind is ojas, and our necessity to really feed. I always think of as our health reserves and our vitality, that in an effort to feed all of the different tissues of the body and to result in having a good supply of ojas and to really feel like we have this zest for life and to be resilient, that ojas is not something that is only fed by food. It's something that is fed by love and happiness and positive experiences and touch and things like that. And so it's not always about our food. And that's also kind of, for me, a big topic of discussion, is that we especially get drawn into, with Ayurveda especially, that it's very attractive, like, oh wow, there's this system that can tell me what food, and that's sort of a draw for people, is what food can I have? But you're missing out on so many other elements that might be impacting your health if the only thing you're interested in is a food list. And so in thinking about Ojas and what it can do for us and the ways that we feed us, in fact, one of the biggest offenses in terms of what can cause those reserves to dwindle is overworking and not being happy in our lives and spreading ourselves too thin and not getting enough sleep. And again, all of those things that we discussed initially that are kind of our society is now, I mean, I would say that we do kind of glorify it, but even if it's not glorified, it's sort of assumed that we should do these things, right? That if you're not productive in a day, that there's something wrong with you. And I'm absolutely, you know, it's hard to not feel that way. You know, I had a weekend day where I just kind of made, you know, it was intentional rest. And so it was like, don't open the laptop. Don't do this. Don't look at your email. Don't look at your calendar. And, you know, there's a little part of me that almost feels guilty for just enjoying that whole day. And in no way is that my own influence, right? There's some external influence that's also pushing me to feel that way. So it's really hard to be a person these days, huh?
I definitely agree with you on that. You know, like, I too face sometimes the same thing. Like, you know, when you feel like, okay, the day is all yours and you suddenly feel guilty, okay, I have so much work to do. What should I do? Should I just, like, stop it? Or what should I do at that point of time? But, you know, like, what you mentioned is quite interesting. And also, you know, one of the things I feel that today, everyone wants to be happy. Internet is full of, you know, searches like how to be happy, how to live a healthier life, because the intent is there. So Sarah, what according to you is stopping people? Because when the intent is there, what is stopping us to be, say, healthier and, you know, happier and fuller, I would say?
Well, I definitely can't say that I know the answer to that question, but I have a hunch that part of it is that we're looking to add, that we look at what can I add to my life to be healthier, or what can I add to my life to be healthier. We're much more resistant to what can I take away from my life that is making me unhappy, or what can I change in my life that is making me unhappy. So we might have a job where we don't feel good. And instead of giving up the job, we look at what else can I do? What can I add to my life? And that creates a lot of stress. So I think one of the answers in that, or at least an answer to explore, is instead of looking at what you can add to your life to find happiness, look at what you can take away that may not be serving you, that may not be filling your cup. Or are there things that you could maybe just change slightly, that maybe it's not the work that you do, but it's the environment with which you work or the people with which you work, that you could just tweak a couple of things and really feel a lot better. So I think it's, instead of looking at what we need to include, what should we take away?
I totally agree on that. I think that's like a good thought, and I feel our listeners are gonna like really think about it, and I hope that they move towards a life that's healthier, happier and fuller. Also, Sarah, give me, you know, some of the ways from Ayurveda that really helps us to strengthen our immune system. For example, what practices can I say incorporate on my daily basis, which is gonna help me, you know, be healthier?
Well, we definitely want to make sure that we're getting enough sleep and sleeping at the right times. So though we might think we need 8 hours of sleep, those 8 hours should really come somewhere between the hours, let's say like between 10 and 6, so that we're not going to bed too late, also not going to bed too early or sleeping too late. So having the...
Does that mean no binge watching?
Well, you can binge watch, right? But maybe at a certain time instead. It's funny you say that because, again, like I will never, I am not the perfect, you know, I don't have the perfect practices in place. I try, but it's funny that binge watching is something that can make me fall asleep. So if I have trouble with sleep, watching something actually can put me to sleep. So it's like my own little sleep medication. So I wouldn't recommend it if you can, because I would always recommend avoiding devices and screens when we can. But yeah, the timing that I mentioned first, because I think it's one of the things that we struggle with the most, and that the more stress we have, the worse our sleep is. And that's when our body restores and repairs. And so if we're breaking down our bodies and our minds throughout the day, and we can't restore them at night, then we're definitely not going to be able to strengthen our immune system. So that sleep is one of the more important things to me. Of course, that we mentioned digestion and making sure our digestion is healthy and strong. Using oil on your body externally, in terms of like whether it's a full Abhyanga practice, if you can't, you know, that can take a long time. And that suggestion of adding a long practice to an already busy day can be very daunting. But if you set aside one day where you can do that, or you do an abbreviated practice, or you just oil certain parts of your body, that can also provide a lot of health.
What parts would you recommend to oil, like some of the parts that we should definitely oil?
Well, my recommendation if you're doing an abbreviated practice would be to first pay attention to your vulnerable places. So if you do have, let's say, like joint pain, for example, if you have a knee that hurts or maybe parts of your body that, like, if you use your shoulders a lot in your work, that I definitely would say to focus on those areas of your body. But also getting just like a nice little abdominal, like anything in your torso, and making sure that you can get the center of your body is really wonderful. Over your heart and across your abdomen, I feel, are two really key places. I would say our head, but again, if you're someone that worries about having enough time to say like rinse your hair or to not have oil in your hair, then that with our modern day society may not be a more popular area to oil. But I do think too that a part of building our immune system is using nasia oil, so that putting oil into your nasal passageways so that you're creating a nice barrier. So if you are around any kind of irritants, allergens, that you're staying fully hydrated and can have a protective layer between, or a boundary, which is also why, another reason why oil on our skin can be really great, because if you have a healthy barrier, which oil is helpful for building up the barrier, less likely for things to get into your body. So that's another really important one, I believe. So aside from digestion, sleep, oil, nasya, you know, another thing is really just thinking away from some of maybe the more typical or standard answers to this question. I think those moments in our life where we can have intentional rest, that rest and sleep are not the same things, that we do need sleep, but we also need rest, that we can't be productive all of the time. And I was saying that, you know, I had my own little moment of feeling guilty during a day that I had taken off for rest. But also having that day is really important because I may not have that as much during the week. So if you don't feel like you can have those moments of intentional rest during the week, could you take half of a day? Could you take a full day to sort of step out of your responsibilities and away from the things that take a lot of your energy? Those are the main ones that come to mind. There are so many.
And also, you know, one of them to add to would be that, for example, you know, when there is a particular thing, we know, suppose it's happening at 2 p.m., like from the morning 7, we will be, you know, thinking about that, what's going to happen at 2 p.m., how I'm going to do it. So like one thing which I have like now started doing is like intentionally shift focus. I'd be like, okay, we'll figure it out at 2 p.m. what happens, but we're not going to stress about the same thing from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m.
I absolutely agree with that. And that's something I've been paying attention to in the last couple of weeks, that I've had a lot of extra responsibilities in the last month or so. And I've actually had to say to myself, you don't have to think about that now. I mean, a part of that is just being present, right? But if I just say, be present, that almost, it doesn't work. It's like just telling someone, just relax. It's not that simple. But an element that works toward that is, like for me, like you're saying, is saying, okay, don't think about that now. I can't do anything about that right now. But when I have time to sit and be clear in my mind, and I'll be more effective, I'll be more effective in everything I do because I'm not taking thought away. Yeah. And I think to add to that idea too, is that I'm often recommending to people to pay attention to transitions in their day. And that might be another way of making sure that you don't have responsibilities or thoughts or things bleeding into every part of your day. That as I'm coming to chat with you, I sit and I think, okay, here I am, I'm ready for my chat. And I don't want to close my laptop and then run off to the next thing. I want to take a moment, kind of recenter myself, and then move on and give myself that chance in between to really focus, like you said.
No, clearly well said, Sarah. So also, Sarah, I want to ask you this question, that like, I have seen some children fall sick too often from a very young age. What could be the probable reason, and what can parents do to heal this?
So I think there can be many reasons, as you know, it might depend on the child themselves, but looking at maybe some overarching things, it's possible that there was something that happened during pregnancy, that maybe the mother had her own sorts of trauma or illnesses or things that she was dealing with during pregnancy or even around birth, that the child maybe came into the world already feeling that way. I know that children in where I live are very busy, and it's astounding to me the amount of things that kids do. That, you know, when I was growing up, I thought I was a busy kid, and now it's just crazy, you know, starting a soccer game at 10 at night. So even though the kids really enjoy that, I think the only way that something like that could shift is if it's not available to them, which would be a hard thing for a society to come to terms to change. But given that kids have schedules that are just as busy as ours, it's also quite likely that they don't have the routine that they need as well. It's much more likely that kids have routine than we do, because for some reason we can go, oh, you need to eat, you need to sleep, and you need to go to bed at this time, which we don't do for ourselves. But at the same time, kids are also spread too thin. So I think it really comes down to routine and really being, and maybe unfortunately having the boundaries to say, no, like that's not something you're going to participate in today. But it's again, more protection of their energy, both physical and mental energy, or tangible and non-tangible, that they're always able to refill, that they're not depleting themselves too. It's really sad to think about that even kids get sick and depleted as much as we busy working adults do.
Also, like Sarah, tell me that were there any challenges or any particular challenge that you were facing and Ayurveda really became your anchor in overcoming it?
You know, the idea of routine was probably one of the biggest things for me. I always say that the biggest thing Ayurveda has done for me is created even more intention in my life, that I don't arbitrarily eat something or arbitrarily choose what type of exercise I'm going to do, that I do have that moment to check in. So that would be one of the biggest things, because understanding that there are impacts of various degrees on various levels of my being, other than what I might already know from other types of health or medicine, that knowing that from Ayurveda has created a big, big impact. But with regards to something that I would say I was struggling with, is really more of this idea that if I have as many hours as I have in a day, I personally can fill it with whatever I want. And so what Ayurveda has taught me is that that is not really the best thing to do. I think that's something our whole society is suffering from, that we can connect and work and we don't have to be at home to answer the phone. That we don't have to be at work to work, that all of those things have really impacted us. And so those were the shifts that I made. And part of that comes down to also knowing and implementing the Ayurvedic clock, that kind of giving myself a reference of this is the best time of day to do this. And if I fight that, if I go against the grain and it's not going to work and I'm going to become frustrated, I'm going to become sick. So my struggle, I would easily say burnout, you know, kind of being on that point of too much. And so Ayurveda's assistance for me was really being able to create some bookends and anchors and container for how I live my life. Yeah.
How amazing is that? My final two questions would be, one myth if you had to break about Ayurveda, what would it be?
Ooh, this is a tough one. So I think one of the myths is that, I hesitate in saying this because I think it surrounds more of your dosha, that of course, there's so much that we know from knowing our dosha, but I think that we get really locked into like, I have to know my dosha to attempt practicing anything in Ayurveda, or that I'm this dosha, or that my dosha, my prakriti is the only important thing. So I believe more that looking at, of course, like the imbalance that we deal with, that our vikriti is much more important, and also not just our dosha, but thinking of the elements and the gunas and the things that are really making up constitution. So maybe that's not a myth, but I think that it's something that we're drawn to excessively. It's very attractive. It's obviously very important. I don't want to say it's a myth because it's not that knowing that is important, but it's not the only important thing. Yeah.
So your message for our listeners who are on this healing journey and who are just about to begin this beautiful, incredible journey of towards a healthier, happier, and a fuller life.
I think the best thing that someone can do is to really learn their own ways of checking in and to take time to have those check-ins. So maybe this is a process of reflecting when they were happiest, when they were healthiest, and comparing that to how they are living their lives today, and to create sort of a baseline, and kind of like how you were talking about earlier, like if I have something at 2, I'm not going to think about that all day. So I'm not suggesting that they think about this every moment of every day, but maybe at the end of the week or once a month, they come back to this notion and go, am I now in alignment? You know, am I closer in alignment with those things that allow me to be happy and to be healthy, to have a time to actually check in, to pause.
Brilliant, Sara. And to our listeners, guys, you're on a correct path. So just keep moving towards a healthier, happier, and fuller life. And we're always there to be just by your side, to be cheerleading you at moments when you feel like, I don't know if I'll be able to do this. So we are just by your side. So thank you, Sara. Thank you so much for doing this. And thank you for empowering us towards a healthier, happier, and a fuller life.
Thank you.